Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! Three, two, one!
The Gladiators!
Hello and welcome to the Glad Pod in association with Gladiators TV. I'm David Blackmore, and with me, as always, is producer Paul and Diane Udell, aka Jet. So diving into the mailbag this week, and there is an email from Faye Clough in Warsaw. Now, she turned 30 last May, and her party was gladiator themed with an inflatable obstacle course. Faye, please send us images in for this. Paul, I vaguely feel like I've asked you this question before, but have you ever had a gladiator themed party?
I haven't had a gladiator themed birthday party, which, like, how weird is that, that in all of my years that I've never had that, even as a kid? Not even a cake, not even a gladiator's birthday cake. But I think probably because every day was a gladiator related day for me back in those days, that it's probably, it never happened. But yeah, I'm not sure why my parents never thought to do a gladiator themed party for me. I'm a bit disappointed, to be honest.
And the question from me to the listeners, really, if have you ever had a gladiators themed party? Do let us know. And also, have you ever had any gladiators turn up for your birthday party? Maybe you were friends with one of their kids and then they had to do the pickup or drop off and they dropped in. And then I was also going to say, Paul, for your birthdays, particularly now on social media where it alerts you to the fact that it is your birthday, is it still great to get birthday greetings from gladiators?
Definitely. I mean, it never kind of always transports me back to being like in my early teens. And like you say, sometimes a gladiator would send a birthday card to you through the post and stuff like that. So obviously it's easier nowadays with social media, but it's always just as special. But they did release gladiator like birthday cards and stuff like that, so it was always good to see your friends picking the right gladiator to send you, or getting like a present that was wrapped in the gladiator's wrapping paper and stuff like that. So they did do all of the party merch. You could have a proper full-on gladiator party as well. I probably just didn't want to open it as a kid, weirdly. Probably just wanted to keep it in the packet.
So who did you get birthday cards from?
Quite a lot of them. I think I've got some from Die back in the day, Panther. Yeah.
And would it just be like two, Paul, and then the happy birthday printed out, just normal, and then there's a signature underneath?
Yeah.
There's like... The amount of stuff you'd get through the post, I mean, it's unbelievable. Di, Faye's also got a bit of an obscure question for you. So was the way you wore your head guard a conscious choice? Now, she feels like you always wore the strap on your chin rather than under. And she's a kickboxer. So she's just been intrigued to know if that was just preference or what was the thinking behind that.
Oh, it's a good question, Faye. From what I remember, it was something to do with asphyxiation. I think if I had my strap, we're talking about the soft helmets, aren't we? Because that's what you'd use in kickboxing. I don't think I ever got it right because you need to have it on firmly. And I just found it would work on my chin and still allow me to breathe. Kind of like breathing. And so, yeah, so I think we all modified our personal protective clothing in the arenas to whatever we felt worked for us.
Some of the gladiators actually wore their helmets back to front, which if you rewatch the show, you'll see sometimes the G is actually on the back of the head rather than at the front. And yeah, I don't know if it's to keep their hairstyles more intact if they kind of like hairsprayed the hair, or it was just a mistake. But yeah, that would often happen sometimes, and it's quite nice noticing that and rewatching it back.
I'm still at a loss because apparently Faye did mention that that's something that I was doing at the time. There'd have been some logic to it, but I think in that case, it probably was vanity.
Faye also mentions that she would love a podcast with Nightshade. And off the back of your question on Amazon's podcast, she thinks it'd be interesting to have Nightshade and John Anderson together as he coached her both on and off Gladiators. And of course, if it felt different, like their relationship either with Gladiators and or not. I mean, I think for me, first and foremost, I'd like to take a single chat with both of them. But Paul, you know, picking up on that, it would be a great podcast, wouldn't it?
Oh, amazing. Like, I would love to do a Nightshade podcast a lot. Nightshade was just one of the best gladiators ever. She was a true athlete and an inspiration to so many kids growing up, seeing this powerful woman who was not only a fantastic gladiator, but she had just, yeah, she was just superb. I actually own her helmet and pugil stick, which she gave me back in the day when she retired from the show. But but she was the queen of Duel, wasn't she? She was just so formidable. But yeah, I would love to get her on the podcast when the time's right.
Yeah, and I have to say, the correspondence that we've had for this series has been absolutely incredible. It's been so great to hear all your memories and all your questions. And of course, like, we never particularly ask for you guys to actually get in touch with who you'd like to have on the GladPod, but you all volunteer that information freely, which always makes me laugh when I read the emails. But as always, you can get in touch with us by emailing gladpod@gladiatorstv.com or sliding into our DMs on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. But for now, let's get on with this week's show.
I'm delighted that this episode of our gorgeous GladPod is joined by Janie. You may know her as Rio, and she doesn't dance on the shore anymore. Or maybe you do.
No, it's been a while.
How are you doing?
Really, really good. It's so good to see you.
First off, it's Michelle. And she's going to be facing one of this year's new gladiators. It's Rio.
The crowd shout Rio, bravo, because she stands 1 metre 87 tall and weighs in at 83 kilos, and that includes her dimples.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I know Paul's been asking me for... years and years and years and years. Yeah, thank you for keep asking. And I think I'm going to enjoy this trip down memory lane. You guys are all part of the story, and it's so expansive, so intense, so memorable, so such a privileged experience that it's impossible to retain every single memory intact. It's just impossible. So to be able to share and hear your versions and like piece it all together and be like, God, that really happened. The coolest thing.
I think out of all the times that we've done the GladPod now and all the different routes that people have had in, there's been a lot of similarities. So, you know, we've got people that have been, you know, gymnasts like Di, you've got people, you know, weightlifters, bodybuilders, athletes. But your story, Jane, is, I mean, the first thing that struck me when I was reading sort of producer Paul's notes is you've left school and you become an accounts clerk and then you joined the ambulance service mm-hmm. in 1991. Why the ambulance service?
Oh, I'm going to be really honest. I worked in a bank for a year, and after a year it was quite clear that wasn't really something for me, and they asked me to leave. And I was thinking, what on earth am I going to do next? And I was just sitting on a bench in my local town and in the newspaper days, and there was an advert for the ambulance service, and I thought, well, I'll give that a shot. And I was lucky enough to go in for a test to try out, do some sort of written test and a practical test and a driving test, and I got through, and it was one of the best experiences ever. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people say how really rewarding it is as a profession as well. But then fast forward 3 years and you're modelling bridal gowns. How did that come about? Were you spotted? Had you applied? Had someone said to you you should be a model and then you kind of put yourself forward? How did that come about?
People have been saying to me since day one you should do modelling just because I'm tall. And so people are always asking me to do stuff like that. And the bridal gowns was by a lady, Maureen Fuller, who lived in my town. And she made bridal gowns, and I don't know how we got in touch, but she was a wonderful, wonderful lady and a model for her for years. And it was just an excuse to dress up like a princess, you know, because a wedding dress is all like fluffy and big and there's a guy on your arm and there's lovely music. And it was a wonderful experience. Loved it. I don't remember how I got into it. It just kind of happened.
And then really, it's the Miss UK beauty competition where many people would argue is probably the start of your gladiatorial journey. One of your ambulance crewmates jokingly suggested that you should enter Miss UK beauty competition. And although kind of, you know, laughing and joking, you were like, actually, that's made me more determined to actually go ahead and do it. And I think maybe you agree, I don't know, that really is from that moment, that sliding doors moment, that really was then the beginning to you then becoming and joining Gladiators.
I was enjoying my job in the ambulance service. It was really rewarding. And not just because you're helping people, but I was 19 until 23 or something when I left to do Gladiators. And in that short period of time, I was quite young, and I got to see that life is short isn't just a saying. It actually is very, very short for some people, and so unexpectedly short. And so at 19, I really started to feel like almost like, I was going to say a desire, but it's more like an urge, like you owe it to the universe, to yourself, to life, whoever gave you life, to make sure you really wring it out like a sponge and get the best out of it. And I started to feel that There are a couple of patients that I met in a couple of situations that I was in that 4-year period where I just thought, this is such a ride life and I do not want to miss any opportunity. So one day I was in the ambulance service, we dropped a patient off at the hospital and the Sun newspaper had a big headline and it said, win Miss United Kingdom, get £25,000 and then go on to do Miss World. So my female colleague at the time said, hey, you should do that. And I sort of laughed and went, yeah, wouldn't it be funny, £25,000, and we spent the rest of the day saying what we'd buy. And then I went home to my then boyfriend and I said to him, I was ironing in the lounge and I said to him, oh, by the way, if I enter Miss United Kingdom and I win, I get £25,000 and we'll live happily ever after. The exact words, I remember saying it to him. And he laughed and said, you, Miss United Kingdom? I don't think so. And I thought, no, I just wanted you to go, yeah, wouldn't that be fun? And this is what we buy, we go on holiday. Like, just as a joke, I wasn't intending to do it at all. But the fact that he reacted like that just put a bee in my bonnet. So we parted ways. And then I entered the only round that was left, which was Miss Wessex. And the only way I could get to Wessex on time after doing my shift in the ambulance service was if one of my uncles, who was a fireman and rode a motorbike, would pick me up on the back of his bike. We rode like crazy to my other uncle who lived in the New Forest. So I went from Hastings to the New Forest on one uncle's bike. Then he had to go and do a shift in the fire station within a day. So he went to my uncle's, the other uncle. He slept there while the second uncle got on his motorbike and then raced like mad to Wessex. I did this show and it was just fun. But, you know, it was like, can't believe I've made it on time. I walked down the catwalk, did my thing. And then I was backstage putting back my bike leathers back on. And I was dressed to go home. And they came out and said, but you've won, you've got to get back out there. And I had to put the dress back on that I'd scrunched up in my rucksack. So, and then I couldn't carry anything like the flowers and everything that you went. I couldn't carry it because I was on the bike. And that gave me direct entry into Miss United Kingdom. And I was one of the finalists in that. When I did the Miss United Kingdom, there were, obviously the girls were mostly models. So they didn't have the sort of structure that I had. Yeah. I wasn't muscly like bodybuilding, but I've been training since day one. I went to a sports school. I started going to the gym when I was about 18. But I met lots of people who were TV celebrities at the time, like from EastEnders and things like that. And again, I started to think, wait a minute, I've got this job where I'm privileged enough to see how raw life can be and what it really means. And on the other side, I'm meeting people who are, it was a bit like if somebody lifts a curtain to another life and you get a peek around the back and you think, oh, what's that? I didn't know. Oh, they're just the same sort of people as me. So there's another kind of life that's possible. Do you know what I mean? It's like raising the curtain and having a little sneak. And then I went back to the ambulance service and I started to feel like, I've got to get out. Do something. I've got to see what it's all about.
Yeah, and that kind of leads you then being thrust into sort of the gladiator pathway leading to coming on the show. Now, there is a rumour, Jamie, that you'd actually met Rhino first, who suggested that you should try out as a contender and gave you the production telephone number, but you lost that piece of paper. Is that true or is that just an urban myth?
It could be true, but I don't remember any of that. So I don't think that happened at all. If someone had given me the number for Gladiators, I would have. Because me and my girlfriend, years and years before any of this happened, we used to sit and watch Gladiators. I used to watch you check all the time. And I used to watch, and we would sit there and joke about what names we would have. And it would be like, I'm washing machine, I'll spin you out. And, you know, I'm light switch, I'll turn you on. And we used to have all these, like, it was just a standing joke. We'd sit there every Saturday night, we'd pretend we were Gladiators. And so if someone had given me the phone number, if I'd met one, I wouldn't have lost the paper. What actually happened was, when I was in the final of Miss United Kingdom, all the girls were in the middle of the newspaper, and there was a tiny little picture of me in a pink swimming suit, and it said I was 6'2", ambulance driver from Hastings, and that was it. John Anderson, according to John, he said he was on a train one day and somebody had left a Sun newspaper, and he didn't read the Sun, and he picked it up for something to do, and he opened it up and he saw there's a black girl who was very, very tall. She looks a little bit more muscular than the other girls. So he rang the Sun and asked for my phone number. So I, was a Wednesday or a Tuesday, midweek, I came home from the ambulance service from a long shift. I got in, I'm sitting on the sofa, the phone goes, and John Anderson is on the phone. And obviously, I'm thinking, really sounds like the dude from the telly. And he said, oh, do you know who this is? And I sort of went, well, yeah, you sound like John Livingston, but obviously. And he said, no, it is. And I was thinking, no, it can't be. What is happening? And he said, I've got your number from the Sun newspaper. I'd like to meet you and see if you'd like to try out the Gladiators. And that's how it started. I think, trying to piece it all together, I think I met him and he sort of must have given me some like a basic fitness test or something, which I didn't pass. And he said to me, you've got all the right foundations, but you need to work at it. So he introduced me to a guy called Tony Slaney, who was ex-Olympic taekwondo coach. He lived in Peterborough. I met Tony once. He gave me a program. I went on the train back to Hastings. I'm working all week as an ambulance driver. I'm trying to train as well, according to what he wanted, and eat and sleep and everything. And it was too much. I went back for a second time and Tony said to me, you can do this, but you have to dedicate yourself to it. Because what I need you to do, you can't do the full-time job. So give up the job. I bought my house. I was 21 when I bought my first house. Rent your house out, sell it. Don't care. Just quit. Come and live with me and my family. He's got three kids about my age. And the whole family accepted me like, I feel like crying when I think about it, accepted me like, I'm just family to them. They've stayed. He's like my surrogate father and the girls are my sisters. Russell's my bro. And I lived with them for about 6 months and I trained 5 days a week, three times a day. Taekwondo I'd never, ever done before. And then when I did the tryout, I passed.
When you did the tryout, were you up against any, were there any gladiators there that trying out at the same time as you?
I honestly don't remember. I just remember dressing up. I wanted to give everyone the impression that I was the one they're looking for. So I remember most people were in like tracksuits. And I bought white, skin-tight hot pants with a bright red thong. I had a white crop top, had all my hair up, full makeup. Every time someone walked in the room, I did the splits. Like I had elbow pads, knee pads. I was like, you're looking for a gladiator? I am one. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to use any imagination. I'm here. And that's
all. Do you think that... that sort of being in beauty contest then, that kind of gave you a different entry to these tryouts? Because I know when we speak to a lot of the other gladiators, what they talk about is actually doing the work on the actual tryout itself. Like, you know, Wolf spoke about how he would do whatever was given, whatever test was given to him, and then go backstage when no one was looking and, you know, breathing out of his ass at that. Whereas what you're just saying there is that actually any opportunity that somebody could see you, whether that's someone walking into a room, you're doing a split, that they're mentally going, oh, look, you know, done the split. She looks like a gladiator. That's exactly what we want. So was that the mentality for you, that any opportunity that someone's going to see, you're going to be looking gladiatorial?
It was everything. So don't forget, I had been working for 6 months, 5 days a week, three times a day. So it wasn't like I'm just going to go and put some lipstick on and do the split. I had worked my ass off, but I knew I got that bit covered. Do you know what I mean? Everybody in that room was fit. There wasn't anyone that wasn't fit, but I needed to be fit, strong, agile, flexible, and look like a gladiator. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like with anything that I want to set my mind to, it's like when I did the motorcycle stuff, I always think, what are the elements that make this, that's going to make me successful? And successful and fulfilled at the same time, because successful without fulfillment isn't really worth very much to me personally. So what are the different elements? So am I strong? Am I flexible? Do I stand out? Do I look like what they want? That's the package. So that's what I'm going to deliver.
Oh, I wish I'd had that mentality when I first started on Glads. I was just like, oh no, what am I doing here?
But you went in all guns blazing.
I always do that. If I really want to do something, I really, really focus on it. But what you just said, like, oh no, what am I doing here? I had that feeling once I got the job. 100%. You know the fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it till you become it.
Mm-hmm.
That they call it imposter syndrome these days. I got the job. I'd worked my ass off to get it. We did plyometrics, weight training, heavy weight training. I did circuits in the evening, taekwondo with the taekwondo champion for Great Britain, like the Olympic coach. he beasted me. And it got to the point where after about 4 or 5 months, I phoned him last night to check because I thought maybe I imagined it. And he said, plan B, because he'd convinced me to leave my job, rent my house. I've got nowhere to live. I've got no money. I'm living with this guy I've only met twice and his entire family. But what happens if I don't get selected? Then what? And he said, and he confirmed last night on the phone, well, that was easy. I was going to turn you into a world-class athlete, a taekwondo champion, because he reckoned that with my weight and the flexibility and the amount of effort I'd put in to do what he said, that if I didn't get into Gladiators, he wanted me to train to do the next Olympics in taekwondo. Like, and now I'm thinking, that would have been interesting. Sliding doors, I mean. Wow. But I did have that imposter syndrome. When I got there, then I saw you. I saw lightning. I saw the guys. They were massive. And I suddenly realized, oh my God, these are professional athletes. These are Olympic champions. These are world-class bodybuilders. These are Vogue, was she a world-class aerobics champion or something? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm an ambulance driver and I've just totally blagged my way. Like, I'd worked hard, but I'm not at that level. There's no way, like, what am I doing here? And then I had that for a long, 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 long time, especially when I discovered I was scared of heights, which I didn't know until...
We'll get on to that in a minute. But what I wanted to do was just rewind slightly, because I know that when you got announced as one of the new gladiators, and it was, I think it was you and Ace at the same time.
Yeah.
They dressed you up in all of this gladiatorial, like Roman kind of get-up stuff, which I always thought was a little bit strange, because obviously it was gladiators wasn't the Roman gladiators. But the Sun newspaper did take a lot of credit for you becoming a gladiator, and they were very proud to say that you'd been selected because of them. And they did say that they sponsored you for 4 months of your training. I just wondered if that was true or if that was just them exaggerating it.
Because John botted me from something I did with the Sun, that they instigated, or they gave him my phone number. So, you know, if something was going to come out of it, why would they not want to say, hey, we found her? So I get that. And because they knew the whole story that I had actually given up my job and I didn't have any savings, like I had just had nothing and I was just training with this crazy training scheme, I think that they sponsored me by giving me work. So I think I did some modeling shoot, because looking back, because I was thinking about, did they sponsor me? They didn't give me money, but I'm sure that I did like different shoots and stories and, you know, like swimwear stuff or underwear stuff or something like that. And that's how I got a little bit of income. So I think sponsorship in that way. And then they ran some kind of competition to suggest a gladiator name. Once I got selected, they came up with Raven because she's a blackbird or something.
Literally couldn't make it up, could you?
It couldn't. But I had a great relationship with the Sun in the beginning, and then for years afterwards as a motorcycle journalist for the Sun newspaper. So yeah, I'm not going to look.
And I remember that very, very well.
It was after me well for a very long time. Yeah.
You've got your costume designed. Did you have any part in that?
I don't remember having a part in the design of the costume. I do remember, I don't remember her name, unfortunately. There was a lady and a guy that used to make the costumes, I think.
Yes. Seeing it happen.
Yeah. And I remember standing, and the lady was kneeling beside my bum, and she had a tape measure to go around my hip. And there was a table next to her, and she put the tape measure out. I just remember this now, and you're asking me. She put the tape measure around my hips, and she looked, and then she got her glasses off the table, and she looked again. And then she wrote the number down, and it's like she couldn't believe. It's an African bum. Yes. Okay. It's slightly bigger. So I don't remember having a say in the costume. I remember perhaps not being the same shape as they were expecting. I don't know.
Onnie in pink and Joanne in yellow start on the balance beams. Now they're pursued by the gladiators at a first ever outing for Rio. Rio very fast. She's easily overtaken Onnie. Will she catch Joanne? Oh, just fails to tag her on the high wall. Joanne escapes by the skin of her teeth. And you can see how close Rio got to tagging her. For a first performance, I think we can all say Rio Grand.
But the first time I went out into the arena, I was terrified. Like, my whole... You know when you're so scared, your adrenaline is just leaking out of your pores, and yeah, you're nodding, you know what I mean, just like hyperventilating. And it sounds really strange because of all the stuff I've done on the TV over the years and the modeling and stuff, but I'm not actually an extrovert. And it became very, very obvious during Corona that I'm not an extrovert at all. I'm an outgoing introvert. But do you know what I mean? There's like a subtle difference. I don't want to go out there, hey, check me out, look at me. I just felt very uncomfortable with that. So I had to have lessons from Donna, cheerleading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donna and Debbie.
Yes.
They gave me lessons in how to lift my chin up, shoulders back, and own it, and go out and do a routine and feel and enjoy it. Because I would like shuffle out and just think, oh, am I doing it?
Wow.
But I had to have help to be confident about it and own it. It took me a really long time. Despite how it might have looked on camera or, you know, what I looked like, I didn't feel like that at all. Inside, not for ages.
Did you feel confident in your body and your shape and when entering the arena then?
Confident in my body, yeah, but confident in inside, no. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I knew I looked the part, because otherwise, you know, I got validated because I got the job, so I knew I looked the part and I knew I was strong, you know, my size, and you know, I'm athletic, always have been, but inside I didn't feel strong and powerful.
And it is such an incredible leap of faith to go for a tryout, not get it, and then have someone that you didn't know that very well saying, look, give up your job, let's do this. And what I'm just trying to get my head around was, had at any stage the producers or anyone associated with Gladiators said to you, go away, work hard, come back and try again? Or if you didn't get that, what was your thought process in just making that leap of faith?
John Anderson had said to me, phoned me up, said, let's meet. I don't remember meeting it, but it must have happened because he introduced me to Tony Slaney. So there must have been a point where he said, you need to get fit. I met Tony. Tony said, you could definitely do this. You've got the foundations. You just need to get strong. And you can't get strong enough in the time frame that we had, because the next tryout was months away. So if you want to try out for the next one, you have to give up your job in order to get this new job, because you could work and you could train and you might have a chance, but you will get it if you do what I say. And if you don't, then I'll train you to be a taekwondo champion. Crazy. He was very believing in me, shall we say. That's why he's my surrogate dad.
And you could have definitely been doing a different podcast. It could have been whatever the TGV Olympics one is.
Could you imagine?
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I definitely don't feel as confident as he does about that statement, but you never know. Managed to get the glad, so who knows.
And you mentioned Raven as being another one of the possible names. The other ones that we've got listed down as an initial apparent names being lined up for you. So we've got Electra or Siren, you know, a link with the Avalanche connection, or Gazelle. So were they all names that were being toyed at that time?
Yeah, I didn't feel, maybe I misunderstood, but I didn't feel like I had a choice. I felt like someone else was going to tell me what my name was. I don't remember being able to say, I want this or I want that. But I don't know. I was quite happy with Rio. It seemed to fit me. And I remember asking why, and they said, you remind me of a Brazilian carnival. And I remember thinking, I'm African, not Brazilian, but okay. And a lot of people, funny though, I know you're laughing, a lot of people have asked me over years if I'm a Brazilian. So I guess it makes sense. It worked for me. I was happy with it. It's only three letters, like jet, and easy to sign.
Absolutely.
Her name is Rio!
So once you got into the arena, what were your biggest kind of fears about the events and training up for each of the individual events? Because, you know, it was hard to become a specialist in some of them when you had so little time to train.
But you guys that were gymnasts, like Vogue, shed such good, you all had such good awareness of space and your own body and your capabilities, and you'd competed. Let's not forget not just how strong you are and what your mindset is, but the experience of competing also teaches you something. How to read the room, I guess, how to read the arena, how to read your opponent, how to perform. And I didn't have that as a background, even as a kid or anything. So yeah, in terms of what was I most scared of, anything that was high. As I said, I didn't know I was scared of heights until I jumped in, because I haven't done anything remotely like that before, so I have no idea. So then it got to the point, which I'm sure you want to bring up at some point, the pendulum occasion, when I got stuck on it because I was just absolutely terrified. Tony Slaney got called in to have a chat with me, because obviously I can't keep this job if I can only if I can't do anything. And we sat down and he said to me, you've got to play to your strengths. You've got to trust yourself and be proud of what you're good at. And don't try to be somebody you're not. So you're not a gymnast and you're not someone who is prepared to or is capable of just doing all the showbiz stuff. You know, it just didn't feel natural, but you are very, very strong. So why don't you think about doing the things that work for you and you will enjoy it. And that's where your confidence comes from, if you enjoy something. And then I had a chat with Lightning and she said to me, even though she was more than capable of doing every single game, that the duel was something she didn't enjoy because it hurt. And I thought, I can take the pressure off the girls by doing the things that hurt them and I don't feel it and I kind of like it. I didn't like hitting people, but I learned a trick, I learned how to get my head around the fact that I'm going to hit someone around the head with a stick. And once I got that, then I was flying.
Army PTI Jude Shenton does a lot of canoeing, but although the actions are the same, a pugil stick is not quite the same as a paddle. Nice combination of headshots from Rio. Jude digging in, fighting back, looking for the chink in Rio's armour. Jude giving her a face full of stick. Have a bit of that. Rio stung into more action now. Straining to let a big one go. Oh, and there it is. Right hook to the chops, and she's flying down from Rio. Even Jude's mum, Enid, is holding her head. That one hurt. Reviewing the action again, Rio tying Jude up, just waiting for the gap to unleash that right-hand bomb. Ba-boom! What a great signing this gladiator was.
Paul, I wanted just to bring you in here because Siren was obviously one of the names that we was suggested for Rio. And actually, you know, we know from doing this that sometimes if there is a natural hook into connecting someone with their name, it does tend to go down quite well. Siren wasn't given to Janie, but then it was later, you know, probably for, I think it was the next series. And also just thinking about your song, Janie, being Rio by Duran Duran. To me, you saying that they're saying it makes you, because they think you look Brazilian. The other part of me thinks maybe they really liked that song and actually just thought, you know what?
Song. Yeah.
We're just going to use that song. So let's, you know, because it obviously say it, the lyric in it, I'm sure, is, isn't it? Her name is Rio. Is that right?
Yeah. And she dances on the...
Yeah. So they must have just been riffing and going like that. But Paul, I just wanted to bring you in on the names then, because surely it would have been better for them to have done Siren, surely.
Yeah, you would have thought so, wouldn't you? Like, I love a connection between the names of when it was something to do with the personality or their background. So, yeah, I remember back in the day, there used to be a Gladiators newspaper. So a whole newspaper that was dedicated to the gladiators, and I remember reading in that when they introduced Jane as one of the new gladiators of Wembley Arena, and they said, and this was even before you'd become Rio, and they said that Siren was on the list, but it was deemed a little bit too sexy for a family show. So it was quite a surprise for Ali, who joined in the next series to become Siren then. So they'd obviously had a change of heart. But Jane, talking about Wembley Arena and obviously joining as a trial gladiator with Ace and Rebel at the time. And Jet was part of the team at Wembley Arena. And obviously, Jet, that's where your injury on Pyramid kind of happened and ended your career. I just wondered, like, when did you witness that injury?
Did you think,
oh my God, what have I signed up to?
Yes. Because Jet, you, along with Lightning and Hunter, were the ultimates. Like, everybody knew Jet, everybody, and the ultimate. And to see the ultimate get hurt, then you just think, what chance of life? Somebody that's so flexible, that knows the game so well, that knows how to handle herself, and she can get hurt like that. I remember seeing your legs flapping like a fish and just thinking, my Lord, what is going on here? And how is this even? I can't imagine, obviously, how it must have felt for you to not only have that experience, but then to have to question, presumably, whether or not you go back. Is it worth it for you? I couldn't even imagine.
I can just remember being scraped off the crash mat at the bottom of Pyramid. And I can only imagine now what it would have done for the likes of yourself and all the other glads to go, do you know what? That was a little bit too close for a neck and spinal injury. So how did you then kind of go, do you know what? But this is a job. That's not going to happen to me. I'm going to get right back out there in the arena and be a gladiator? I mean, how could you have picked yourself up from something like that?
To be honest, I'm not sure that I did. I think that's probably where a lot of the fear that I had came from, because, you know, look at Lightning. She picked herself up and carried on because she was in the team before. She knew you. She had a relationship with you. I was just like stepping in. I felt like a fan that had got a costume on that was running around with you for a bit of fun. Do you know what I mean, though? But she and all the others, they picked themselves up and carried on. But I think I carried that with me for a long time, just thinking, oh, my God, what? Do you know what I mean? And then finding I'm stuck on something super high and I've got to jump off. And that's why the jewel, for example, the reason I didn't lose for a very long time until I got to love it was because I was terrified of falling, because I'd seen you fall. I didn't want to fall. So I just used to hit the object in front of me until it was gone. And then I could jump off. That was it. And in fact, in the training, they used to take out a ladder because I wouldn't jump. And it wasn't, and in the training and the first shows, I hit and hit and hit, object gone, okay. And I said, jump feet first. And they said, you're not allowed to do that. You've got to jump and land across your shoulder blades on the back. And I couldn't do it. And they used to have to get a ladder. And then Nigel said, if you don't jump, then yeah, there's the door. You've got to do it properly when we're filming. And so I just, Tony again came in and helped me and he taught me how to do it. But I don't think I did pick myself up immediately from watching what happened to you, because it wasn't nothing, eh? It was significant.
It was the last time I ever went into the arena, and it was at Wembley in the old stadium.
Yeah.
At the live events when we were auditioning for New Gladiators. And yeah, that's the last time. But wow, I had no idea it had that level of impact.
Perhaps I was just vulnerable. Perhaps I'm just, you know, wasn't as... It was not like, you know, I'd always wanted to be a gladiator. We joked about it with my friends, but it's not like I tried out for it. And at that point, I'd worked for it. I tried hard to get into it. But then when I got into it, it was a bit like, oh my God, what have I done? And then I see that in the very first shows. What a wipeout. How is this possible?
I definitely would like to say those names that you came up with when you were watching it, the washing machine, yeah, the light switch. Now, you say those in jest, and it's only on this series that Paul told us that there was a gladiator called Hot Dog, when you realise that maybe light switch or washing machine actually isn't the worst names in the world to have had. Now, some of the fans, Janie, would have seen you back then as perhaps being a bit of a natural replacement for Nightshade due to, you know, your natural ability on Jewel. Because I know that Nightshade was part of the show in Series 5 too, but, you know, she was sidelined due to illness. So did you guys get on? Did you feel the pressure to take up, you know, her bugle stick mantle? Who would have won in a duel between you and Nightshade?
I did feel the pressure to make sure that she didn't feel that I was replacing her, because it wasn't obvious to me. That didn't enter my mind, but I could hear the whispers. And so I felt very much under pressure to respect her and to not make her feel that that was my intention. And I did actually duel her in practice, and she won. Well, she didn't knock me off, but I couldn't knock her off. She had so much skill, ability, experience, and she actually taught me as well. So yeah, she was just someone that I idolized. Because obviously you have people that you idolize like Jet and Lightning and Hunter and everyone, but she looked like me. Do you know what I mean? So there's a different sort of relationship, and I had nothing but respect for her. And they did put us up against each other in a practice, and I couldn't reach her. She just stuck like glue.
I love those little golden exclusive nuggets that we get out of the GladPod. I can see you both up there going hell never to try and knock each other off. So that's always great to hear.
Yeah.
Who did you get on best with on the show?
Definitely Warren in the first years, because we joined together.
Our new male gladiator, it's Ace.
So we did a lot of traveling to like photo shoots and things, you know, the new glads. We hung out together. I used to go and stay with him in Essex and stuff. And he also came and trained with Tony Slaney quite a bit. So the three of us would hang out and he would train with me the same sorts of things. And you asked me earlier, how did I train for specific games when I didn't have the experience of performing and stuff? So when I'd figured out what the kind of games were that I really need to concentrate on and try my best to do things that are off the ground and the wall and hang tough and everything, try my best, but make sure that I'm very, very good at some things. So I used to practice swinging an Olympic bar, 20, 25 kilos, and just swing it. Tony Slaney got me doing lots and lots of taekwondo, really grounding movements to make sure that when I got hit, I'm not going to wobble. So lots of stances and katas and stuff like that. Yeah, coming back to it, Warren used to come and train with Tony, and the three of us used to hang out quite a bit. So Warren, without doubt. And then later, when Daz came in, Darren Crawford, Diesel, we used to hang out quite a bit as well. We were literally instantly like brother and sister. We looked like brother and sister, and we hung out quite a bit as well. We still speak to him. He's in a Hollywood doing his thing now, eh? Writing books as well now.
Janie, how did your life change when you became a gladiator?
I don't even know where to start. I managed to get out of my hometown. I grew up in kind of a rough-ish world, and I just wanted out. And as I said, within the ambulance service, you just get to see if there is one life. We don't know if we've got any more, but I know I've got this one and I want to make the most of it. And so Gladiator gave me the opportunity not only to get out, like literally location, get out, try something new, but it actually gave me a reason to appreciate why I was built like this. Because for a long time, it just seemed a bit strange. Like, I'm twice as big as everyone. I grew up in an area where there weren't that many black people, and suddenly I get a job because, yeah, this is like I'm built for it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. So it really changed my life, eventually giving me the self-confidence and kind of associating myself with something like, this makes sense. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a little deep, I know, but it makes sense. So it changed my life. Location, open doors. I'm sure, you know, the motorcycle stuff came easier, the TV presenting, because I'd already done the TV, but it gave me an internal sense of validation that I kind of needed, I think.
Andrea's first time on a dueling platform, and what a gladiator to draw. The contenders always tumble when Rio comes to rumble, as the great Noel Coward once said. And Andrea taking the full force of Rio's fury on the face guard. Her helmet may rattle, but she's come to do battle. Andrea soaking up the best that Rio can throw at her. A superb example of sheer dogged defiance by Andrea. It would be easy to bail out, but that's not in this girl's nature. Rio swinging left and right. Andrea getting a pillar to post-pasting. Oh, she cocks one right on the hooter. Right on the hooter.
Now, one of my favourite quotes that producer Paul has dug up about you, Janie, is you were quoted once as saying, "I'm the worst gladiator of all time. The others are professional. It's their way of life. I love eating Chinese, chocolate and crisps. Plus, I hate hitting people." But I think, as we all agree, that the stats and performance kind of prove otherwise. Let's dig a bit deeper into this hitting people, because it was initially kind of you kind of saying sorry whenever you did it, but then you kind of learned just to kind of go at it for 30 seconds and then apologize after. Now, I know a bit earlier on you said it was just changing that mindset, but just dig a bit deeper on that. Like, how long did it take you to change that mindset so that you didn't feel like you were going sorry like that all the time?
Because, and I did say sorry, literally used to say sorry every single time, every single hit, because I knew I was hurting them. What changed was knowing that I needed to do it, because I couldn't do some other things. There were a couple of games that I just knew if they're going to ask me to do that, I cannot. I am too terrified. I can't. So I knew that I had to. And then just logically, I knew that if I could stop myself feeling like I'm hitting someone around the head, then I'll be able to do it easier. So I used to imagine the heads just slightly to the side, because what I was doing was, as I'm swinging and hitting, I'm subconsciously slowing down the impact because I don't want to hit them. So I would imagine in my head that the head is over here, so that the full force goes through the actual person's head and I'm hitting further along. And I spoke to Paul Daniels about it once in Panto, because I arm wrestled him and I couldn't budge him. I mean, the dude, what was he, like 30 years older than me? I couldn't budge him. And he came up with the same principle. There's like, I don't know, technical term for it, where you just move something in your mind so that the leverage that you've got and the impact that you've got, you're driving through what you need to hit, but you're driving all the way through it. So he was imagining that my hand was further along and he's pushing in a different place in his mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's how I got to hit people hard and not feel so sorry, because I felt like I was not hitting them yet. And then I would apologize.
We have some stats of your performances on Gladiators. So On Duel, you played 18 times. You won 15 and drew 3. You lost none, so you were undefeated on Duel throughout your whole career, which is absolutely amazing and proves that you got over your fear of heights, because you did go on to compete on some of the higher games, such as Vertigo. I think if that would show up any fear of heights.
As Lightning proved, you can be less heavy and still win as they shin up their first poles. Claire sure-footed, but Rio has just the advantage. Those poles quivering with each step. Rio at the top needs to put her weight to work if she's to hold sway in this event. Rio less assured than Lightning, but she tops off pole 2. Behind her, Claire makes the stretch to her second perch. Rio getting to grips with pole 3. Claire closing the gap just half a move behind her. If Claire should win, it's 10 points. She comes second, it's a point for every pole. One big stretch for the final hoop, it's Claire. Oh, she's missed it. Rio snatches the victory. A tragedy for Claire. Well, they know how close she was. What a nail biter. On the final reach, Claire touches that ring but can't lock on. And Rio grabs hers with gratitude.
Yeah, but do you remember the things like Skytrack? I just refused point blank. And I know it's not fair to refuse, because we didn't get a choice, but I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. And the pendulum, you've very kindly not mentioned this, but I just think it's not fair for me to pretend it didn't happen. So the pendulum, in practice, I'm up there climbing around, sweating out of nerves. And then it was over and they said, gladiators drop. And my hands were on the net and I couldn't get my fingers to unpeel. Like, I wanted to, but as I looked down, it's a black net, right? So you see through it to the floor. And I just couldn't get myself to drop, to the point where my forearms are cramping because I was up there for so long. Like, everyone was going home and I'm still hanging there like the dancing raisin. They used to call me dancing raisin on Hang Tough, by the way, because I just used to hang there like, wah! So then they had to get a crane to come back into the arena and raise it up so that I could be lowered, like someone unpeel my fingers and lowered onto the crane and then brought back onto the floor where I was just like a piece of jelly.
Oh, it was the cherry picker, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bless it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they had to come and get me. Yeah, come and get me.
Bless you.
Was falling off Hang Tough with the children one of my most embarrassing moments? No, there were several.
But you more than made up for it for the combat games, didn't you? Like, that was your thing. Like, yeah. Suspension Bridge, played it 8 times, won it 8 times, undefeated on that one. Whiplash, played that 6 times, won 5, lost 1. Gauntlet, whopping 42 times, and you were always leading out the team to be the front gladiator. How did that feel when you were leading the ladies out?
I think so, yeah.
I could be wrong, but I can't ever remember you not being at the front.
That's cool, isn't it? Do you know, I liked the gauntlet because it was a team one. You know, I was with the other girls and I really, really liked that feeling. I'm naturally perhaps not a team player. Most of the sports I've done and the activities and the careers I've had have not been in a team. So I remember really enjoying that, you know, the high five and the fist bump, go on, let's do it before you go out there, and then running out with all the girls together and being like, it's my job to protect them. So, I mean, well, yeah, that's how I saw it. I don't want them to get hurt because they need to do all the flick-flacks and stuff, the things that I can't do. So I'm just going to be the brick wall in front and I just need to save them as much as I can. It was as much as about protecting the girls as it was about beating the contender.
20 seconds to run the gauntlet end-to-end and score 10. 30 seconds to score 5, and Rio lowers the boom on any early progress from Nora. Nora looking to shove her way through. Rio responds, pushes her wide, and then shoves her back again. Nora's twin sister Joanne dishing out some stick to Rio because she's dishing it out to Nora. Nora can kiss the 10 points goodbye. Oh, finally forces herself through the turnstile, but that only takes her into Rebel country. Rebel working with the pads, double-fisted pushbacks. The time and the points slipping away from Nora. Still giving it plenty, but never quite enough. What a battle.
She was going to let you through, Rio, there at the start. If we could just bring in Rio here. I mean, when you hear them knocking on the door and you're saying, you're not coming in. Certainly not. That's the name of the game.
So on that, though, just Powerball, did you like that? Because that was one of the only, again, team events that we could actually play.
The Powerball, was that where we were like with three and the girls had to put a ball in a sort of a wobbly thing?
That's right. That's right.
It took me a long time to get my head around that because it was a bit like rugby and I could just see elbows and knees and heads. Do you know what I mean, though? Like, you're going to tackle someone and get something in your face. It took me a long time to get my head around how to do that. And I remember going on, well, Tony Slane used to get me doing all kinds of things to sort of practice a game without having a game in front of him. So I remember he called Warren up and we were tackling each other in the local gym. And Warren's a big guy. It hurt. Tony used to sit, he had a long gravel driveway and used to sit in his car and I used to push him up the driveway while he's sitting in the car. And I sumo ball. Yeah, push.
Any great functional fitness there. So can we safely say that Powerball and it was probably your least favourite event?
No, it wasn't my least favourite. No, the things that are really high up the floor were my least favourites. But Powerball was another powerful, you know, agile, you're in a team. I kind of liked it, but it took me a while to get my head around it, how to do it so that I felt like I could get the upper hand and not just come out of it, you know, needing more ibuprofen.
And just before we move on from the events, you were one of the only gladiators, or a handful of gladiators, should I say, that played three of the brand new games in 1998. So just when we were kind of coming towards the end of Gladiators, where I think some of the fans would say the events went a little bit strange. So there was Dogfight, yeah. Vertigo and Catapult. So Dogfight, everybody, I think, thought that you'd be amazing on it because it was a hitting game. But again, it was one that was high up in the air, wasn't it? So that was a very strange game.
Yeah, no, I didn't feel very comfortable with that one.
As the aerial engagement commences, those glowing chest plates are the target. Oh, Rio's caught for one. That's 5 points for Kate, and she's like the Red Baron up there. One more, and it's 10 points. Oh, Rio's gone. Explosive stuff from Kate. 10-point victory, and Dad's on his feet. Mum's legs have gone as we relive the finish. Rio's aim is wayward, but Kate knows just where the points are and slams home that finish. Rio ejected.
Well, Rio, I was going to say that that game's pretty close to Duel, but you're nothing like that on Duel.
Well, it feels a bit alien to me to be wielding a stick and not have to aim at the head and not have to hit hardly, but maybe I'll get the hang of it, you never know.
And you think the rest is normal on this show?
Yeah,
totally normal.
And the catapult, wasn't that where we were like with like bungee ropes and you just have to jump up and down? That's just, isn't that a bit of sort of luck that someone's jumping up and the other one's at the, I don't know, strange? Well, not my favourites.
Yeah, they were quite strange ones.
Yeah.
And then you've mentioned some embarrassing moments. So obviously the Train to Win, the kids version, where they put you on Hang Tough. And I think you're giving yourself a hard time here because what happened with the kids version was that the kids had to go from one side to the other, tag the gladiator, and then the gladiator had to come back to get to the other side. And whoever got there first was the winner. Whereas when you started going back, the rings were moving all over the place. Like, it was impossible for you to get hold of them.
Oh, you're so kind. It was
even
so kind.
Even Cobra, who was like the master of the rings, he even struggled to get back on them.
Lysimba and Lauren, are you ready? Rio and Cobra, are you ready? 3, 2, 1. And Lysimba and Lauren launch themselves into this challenge. It's not easy, this. And just one more swing, perhaps. And yes, undercarriage down, and he's safe home. Lauren still trying to get there. As Rio sets off. Here comes Cobra, trying to prove he is the Lord of the Rings. He's got some serious swinging to do to catch up. But Rio's having none of it. But look, she's got a bit of trouble getting hold of anything now. Come on, Rio, get a grip. There's nothing to grab hold of, though. She's really struggling. Cobra's managing to scramble into the lead. He's got the rhythm of the swings. This is how you do it. He's making it look easy. He's going to warp this, or maybe swing this. But now I spoke too soon, he's missed a ring, and Rio's struggling as well. She's got nothing to grab hold of. Come on, guys, don't hang around. Oh, and Rio's fallen. What a disaster. Which means that Cobra, if he can manage that final swing, he can finish first and grab those all-important 10 points.
And Rio, what can I say, Rio?
Oh dear, what can I say? I'm so sorry. She gave me a few tips to start off with. But you know, when the ring's already swinging, it's really hard to get across. I think it's fantastic that he made it across in such good time. And I only hope I can make it up to you.
And then I can't not mention your moment in the Atlaspheres where you were playing a superb game of Atlaspheres. And then at the end of the game, when it came to getting you out of the Atlasphere, and I was in the audience for this as well, so I can remember it. They couldn't get the door off. You were locked in the Atlasphere.
And I remember thinking, they will get me out at some point. So don't panic, Mr. Mannering. Just say it will be fine in the end. Keep breathing.
They had to actually roll you out of the arena in the Atlasphere because it was taking them so long and they needed to get on with the next event. And I can just remember them hooking you up and you just had to get rolled out of the arena for them to deal with it backstage.
There were some good moments, weren't there?
First time out this series for the bone-crunching Atlaspheres. Judith gets rolling. Oh, she's all ends up. Not a very good start. Sue very fast to the middle. Impact. Judith is free. Falcon on a vapor trail. There's 3 points for every pod. Oh, but Jude can't sink it. Sue finding Rio just as dangerous when she's inside a cage.
Rio, you did such a bad job. We're going to keep you in the cage for a while. But no, seriously, how did that go for you?
It was really good fun, actually. I just can't stop thinking about the fact that I'm stuck in this cage at the moment. So.
Well, while the team get the blowtorch out to release Rio, a look at the scores confirms it's Judith 9, Sue 3.
And then one last thing on the games. What I like to give the Gladiators is their overall win rate of their all of their individual performances. So out of 44 one-to-one performances, you won 31 of them, and that gives you a 70.45% win rate.
I would take that.
It's very impressive. I think Jet's just at 71, so you're just like less than a percentage behind Jet.
Well, I'll take that. Or anywhere in the vicinity of Jet, I'll take that. Thanks for doing those stats. That's really cool. I think my son will love to hear all that.
Do you ever play back any on YouTube or any of the bits back to him? Is he fully aware of just what you've done?
Be honest, he's mostly interested in the motorbike stuff and the car stuff. That's like, you know, mum can do a 12 o'clock really. That's cool for a 12-year-old boy, but she still prance about in, you know, what looks like underwear with a big cotton buds. Because they didn't have gladiators in Belgium, I don't think. So most people here have no idea what I'm talking about. So I just don't bother. They really don't know what it is.
Well, you're living in Belgium now, which is obviously abroad. But actually, it was when you were in Gladiators that you went abroad for the first time. Is that right? When you went to the Gladiators training camp in Mauritius. Yeah. And legend has it that the other Gladiators told the pilot when he was on the plane over to Mauritius, and he invited you up to the cockpit. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I grew up as a ward of court. So I wasn't allowed out of the country until I was 18. And then I think I went on a train to Paris or something. So I'd never been on an aeroplane. And obviously all the other gladiators had. And it was a bit strange that I hadn't. So they all thought it was hysterical. And they told the pilots, obviously, at the times where you're allowed to go into the cockpit. And I was there for the takeoff and for the landing. They called me back in for the landing. And I was the whole time like, oh my God, what is it? Yeah, I just thought it was incredible.
And I bet you probably haven't experienced anything like the Gladiators training camp in Mauritius either.
No, but I really enjoyed that. I got a couple of memories. We had to ride horses for some reason along a beach. And they were all ex-race horses. So they had like these blinkers on. And my horse managed to see another horse beside it. And so it thought it was in a race. Obviously, I can't ride a horse. So I'm on this horse. It starts to race the horse next to it, and it's really galloping along right on the water's edge. There's like rocks. I can see its hooves like pounding in the water and the rocks there. And I'm just, oh. And then it did a wheelie, best way I can describe what horses do. And I fell off. It kicked me and then it ran into this. There was a place, a grassy bit where people were having picnics, and it ran into the middle and these people getting up. And afterwards, we watched the footage back, and I think it was Kenny, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Kenny Ward.
Yeah, we were watching all the footage, and he was standing right by the cameraman. So you see my horse go off. You see the other horse come alongside. My horse go, oh, let's go then. take off, and then you hear him go, "Someone go and get Rio." And Donna apparently could ride horse. She jumped on a horse to try and get to me and save me before it all went horribly wrong.
Very strange experience.
And then I remember something else. We had to do some training with John Anderson, because it was training too. Lots of filming, but little bits of training. And we had to do something with John Anderson, and I couldn't do it, and everybody else could. And again, I had that imposter syndrome, like, what am I doing here? These guys, you know, they know all the moves, and they know what they're doing, and I just don't. And I got up at 5 o'clock the next morning, and I went back to the location, and I worked and I worked and I worked and I worked. And I went back to bed, went back to my room, and did as if I hadn't been up for 4 hours practicing. When we went back later that day and tried it again, and I could do it. And I remember people looking at me like, "What? Yesterday?" I had no idea. But yeah, I got up crack of dawn just to make sure I wasn't gonna fail again.
So we're going from Mauritius, and now I'm going to bring us back a bit closer to home and to Malta, where just before the final series of Gladiators in was being filmed in 1999, you spent 2 months there for the film Gladiator, starring Russell Crowe. Now, we've already spoken to Rebel about this, but what are your memories of being part of that? I mean, obviously, apart from being sliced in half, and you know, I mean, you're doing great for that, really.
Thank you very much. Nothing but a bit of gaffer tape won't fix it. What happened was Diesel, Daz, who I was really good friends with, he called me one day and said, because he always wanted to be an actor, he called me and said he's just done an audition for a huge movie that's coming out. He didn't get the job. And I remember him saying, because he was too good looking, because they're looking for rugged guys. But they were looking for tall Amazonian black women that are fit and attractive. And he said, and I thought of you. So he gave me the address. I turned up. There was a questionnaire, like, because I didn't realize it was for a stunt woman. I don't know what I thought. He just said go, so I went. But they were looking for a stunt woman, so you had to tick your skills, and I ticked everything. And surely that would have been a red flag, because no stunt woman is going to go, "Can you like go walk through fire? Yeah. Can you ride horses? Yes. Can you do archery? Yes. Can you do sword fighting? Yes." I just ticked yes for everything, and they didn't question it. And then I heard that they were looking for someone else, so I gave Jenny a call and said, "Jenny, I've just done this audition, and apparently they're looking for black girls like us, so why don't you go along?" And then we both got the job. I didn't realize that Pauline had auditioned. I don't know how that came about, but obviously we saw each other when we were filming.
You had probably the most iconic exit from that movie. I think it's one that whenever you say Gladiator, woman sliced in half, that is the vision that you get of that whole movie.
Yeah, people always remember if I say, you know, anything to do with it, and like, "Oh yeah, I was one cut in half," they go, "No, really?" We went out there, we had archery lessons for like 2 or 3 weeks, got big welts on our forearms from learning archery. We were standing stationary, had to fire the arrows into like buckets and things, and then we progressed to doing it out of a moving chariot, which is completely different to try and aim. Obviously, you know, you're not trying to actually kill someone, but you've got to look like you're aiming and you're firing the arrow more or less in the direction that it needs to go for the shot. So we had to learn how to do it stationary, then out of the vehicle, but then you've got the chariot, all the dust and everything going in your eyes. So that was a challenge. But when I had to do my scene, I'm thrown out of the chariot, I'm on the floor, and then it's all like, okay, now we're going to film. So I'm kneeling on the floor, I've got my arms up in a I'm just about to die position, and there was a chariot going to come towards me, and the blade that cuts me in half was a rubber blade. So the chariot needs to come close enough so that the rubber blade actually hits my torso and I have to fling myself back, right? That's the scenario. They said to me, "This is your mark, do not move." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, okay." I didn't move. The chariot came towards me. I felt the blade. I was so terrified that I couldn't make a screaming, "I'm dying" sound, because can you imagine kneeling and having, was it two horses at the front? I don't know, even if it was just one. A horse charging at you while you're kneeling on the floor and you're not allowed to move. Can you imagine? And then there's a chariot behind it, and the wheel. You have the wheel and you have the blade. So the wheel had to pass by my knees, literally inches, in order for the blade to hit me. So when I eventually stood up, they came over and said, "You can scream if you want." And I was like, I literally couldn't make a sound. I just was so terrified. Nothing came out. Later, I spoke to the stuntman who was in the chariot, his little Italian man, and he said he couldn't see me because he was quite short and he's standing in the chariot. He's got the horses over the top, and I'm on the floor somewhere down there. That's why I wasn't allowed to move, because they could have run me over. And I don't actually think I was supposed to do that stunt, because I wasn't actually a stuntwoman. But I ticked all the boxes, you see.
Going from being sliced in half on Gladiator to you guys slicing a hole in on, into our Saturday night with Gladiator's ending. How did you feel about the show ending? Did you feel like it could have gone on longer? Do you think the timing was right? Do you think anything could have been done to improve the show to keep it going on a bit more?
I don't know. I think at the time we were all gutted because it was our livelihood, it was our job, it was our identity at that point. So yeah, it was disappointing, but it wasn't long before another door opened and I got a peek behind another curtain and thought, well, that looks fun. So, you know, I learned so much from it. I got a lot of self-confidence and validation that why I'd been, my soul is traveling through this unique experience in this kind of body. I understood that and it made sense to me and I could own it. And then moving on to another adventure in life. Could it have been any different? Honestly, I don't know. I don't think I really stopped to think about it that much. Like, you know, you lick your wounds, you pick yourself up and then you just get on with the next day and think, right, what's next? And it turned out to be riding motorbikes.
Well, before that, there was another plane involved in another location, wasn't there? Because you and a small kind of team of gladiators went over to South Africa for the Springbok Challenge 2, which Hunter James Crossley organised along with myself. I remember running the Gladiators website back in the day, and the South African producers emailed me and were like, we want some of the gladiators to come over. What was your experience like going over and competing in South Africa in their arena? How did it compare to the UK version? Did you like the South African gladiators team?
It was just an amazing. This is a period of my life that I am so grateful for, because I don't know how to really describe it. We went out there and they had a team that was also mixed race. But the way they interacted with each other was nothing like how we interacted with each other. And there was one point where one of the black girls came out to me and she said, I need to speak to you. And she was quite scary. And I thought, oh my God, what's happened? She took me outside and she burst into tears and she said, because you're here, they're treating us differently. There was, in that point, we were being invited to go out with the South African team to go for dinner or to go and see a show or whatever. But we were invited by the black guys or we were invited by the white guys. And it was never the whole team. We're never together. And in the, you remember what it's like, Jet, in the green room, you cuddling each other, you sit on each other's knees. There's lots of, you know, you're just a team. And there, it wasn't like that. And we had made such a difference to the way I didn't expect to be treated any differently, no matter what color of skin you had or I have. I didn't expect it. And that's the first time that they saw a real team and a real family where you were respecting each other just because you're a family and a team. So the fact that we made that much difference, I had no idea until she said it, but she was crying her eyes out and it really impacted me. I thought it was just astonishing. And then, yeah, we had with me, James Hunter, and Warren, we stayed on for 2 months and we had the most amazing adventure. I got sucked into a whirlpool in the Zambezi River. We hung out of hot air balloons on bits of rope, all kinds of crazy stuff.
You were loving it, were you, out in South Africa, which is the slogan for McDonald's. Do you want to take that away?
Yeah, so James had got this itinerary. We were there for 2 months, I think it was, and he had an itinerary of everything we were going to do, sightseeing, things that we had to definitely see and do. And part of it was training. So he'd probably got up at the crack of dawn to go training and me and Warren didn't. And then we decided that we were going to go in training. So we were heading to the gym, I swear, got off all this, and we passed by a McDonald's. So we thought, we'll just nip in, get a quick burger. And as we pulled into the drive-by bit, like the drive-in, the little tiny window at the side, we noticed that there was a girl trying to climb out of a window that was like the size of an A4 bit of paper, and she was screaming, bomb. And it took a couple of seconds to register. Oh my God, this is the situation. So Warren literally yanked the handbrake. I don't know why, but I think he took it clean off. I, meanwhile, was trying to stamp the windscreen out to get out of the car because we'd locked it. Everyone said you can't drive in South Africa with the doors unlocked because of hijackings. So drive with the doors locked. And we forgot that the doors were locked. So we were trying to get out the car and panic. Then Warren calmly leaned across, unlocked the doors, we ran, and then the bomb disposal unit turned up, the TV cameras turned up, the people were still in McDonald's and they weren't allowed to leave the tills. And then we were trying to, is it really a bomb? Is it not really a bomb? And we went and spoke to one of the army guys and they said, yeah, it is. And we said, can we go and retrieve our vehicle? And they went, yeah, if you want. Like, I don't know if it happened all the time. So we just decided to make a run for it, get back in the car and then reverse out of the driving bit. And we just went back straight to James and all we could say was, why are you in McDonald's? Why weren't you in the gym? Oh, sorry, Dad. Sorry, Dad.
Crikey. Just move on to the Sky reboot. What did you make of that?
I didn't see any of the Sky programs. I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't have access to it over here, or I don't know, call that they brought it back. And I knew they were doing Legends because somebody called me from the team and I wanted to join in. But I kind of, you know, shut the door, moved to the next thing.
What would you make of it if it ever came back? Because we know that BBC.
Yes.
Have done a remake.
Yes.
What are you thinking?
Well, I got an invitation to go and watch it, but yeah. My son was at school, so I couldn't get from Belgium to, was it Sheffield, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I couldn't get there in time, not without dragging him through the middle of the night. So, but I would have loved to have got it. Had it been just logistically easier, I would have definitely loved to have gone just to watch, just to see, just to show him really, like, I'm not making it up. Mama used to do this, boy. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen it. And I just hope that I've seen little images passing by and it just looks astonishing. It looks really good, right? It looks like if you're going to do it, this is how it should be done. I don't know if that's going to translate, but so far, from the things I've seen, it looks really, really cool.
The question I always want to ask when people come on, when I know Paul has been speaking to you for so long, why now? Was it something that Paul said, or was it something that you know, internally have gone, now's the right time for me to share my story?
I think it's a combination of stuff. I'm in a transitional period. I'm changing careers again. Really excited about it. And in order to do the next step, I thought, well, I've been in social media denial for years because the Gladiators in the beginning, we didn't have social media, but I still found it very intrusive for me personally. That's just how it felt. So I didn't want social media. I just didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't have Facebook. I didn't have Insta. I don't want to do it. And then I thought, well, if I really want to reach out to other women and help them in the way that I do, I probably need to get the gram. So I got the gram and then people are now reaching out. And then Paul obviously found me like trying to, how does this work? I'm going to post a picture of me in the gym. Here we go. And they said, do you fancy doing it? And I thought, well, it's rude to keep saying no, isn't it? It's just rude. Dude's been asking for so long. Why would I want now? Because, you know, like I said, shut the door, move on, shut the door, move on. But I'm kind of checking, like, shut all these doors, where am I at now?
If I had a button or means to take you back in time to go back to that very beginning when it all started for you with Gladiators, would you be like, yep, let's push it? Or would you say, actually, no, I don't want to push it? And if you did push it, would you do anything different second time round?
I would definitely still do it. Definitely, no question. Would I do something differently? I think I'd probably try to work harder on my own self-esteem, my own self-confidence, my inner strength, so that I could handle the process better and make more of it, because it shook me, some of it. I loved it, don't get me wrong. I really, really loved it, and it helped me become who I am right now. I definitely would not do it. Definitely not. It was amazing, utterly amazing. I don't regret it. Loved it. I feel very, very privileged to have had the experience.
Let's get right up to date with what you're doing now then.
So I left the Gladiators. What did I say straight away? I think it was pretty much bits and pieces here and there. And then I started becoming a motorcycle journalist. And I was a journalist for the Sun newspaper for about 7-8 years or something. The Sunday Times presented British Superbikes, World Superbikes, Isle of Man TT, and then loads of different like house shows and fishing shows and all kinds of things. And then, so I was presenting TV and testing the bikes themselves. So it was a beautiful combination because then I could test and interview people. And then like in the British Superbikes, say, oh, can I ride your bike then? And then I could write about that in the Sun. So it was really, really fun. And then I ended that in 2016. And then I created a brand new, co-founded brand new concept in Mechelen, moved to Belgium. And it's a skateboarding concept where it's a shop. So we sell skateboards, shoes, clothes, all of those things. And also it's a home place, so young people can come. It's a safe zone where they can be themselves, they can meet with each other. They're not obliged to buy anything. Like in most shops you go in, you know, people look at you, a bunch of kids walk in and they, like, you know, looking what you're gonna lick. Or with us, you come in, you can have a chat, tell me about your exams, tell me if something's going on at home. You don't feel comfortable talking to somebody else. We've got connections with the youth departments and various support groups, not just kids, but people who need some extra help. And then also founded a charity that does skateboarding lessons and camps and workshops with the city and the youth departments. And I'm just moving on from that. And because I'm now 52 and menopausal, and I've noticed change in my body and how I sleep and how I feel, and I've really been diving deep into it. And so now I'm on a new venture to help other women transition through this period of life. It can be a little challenging at times. Most of the people I know here are at least 10 years younger than me, so they're heading into it. And the things they're talking about and the way that they're training and how their bodies are reacting to the training differently because of lack of sleep or, you know, the hormonal change. So, yeah, I'm really, I'm just kind of falling into it. It seems something that is now what I want to do. I don't ride bikes anymore, don't skateboard anymore, don't hit people anymore, definitely not. But now the training is something that I'm really excited about.
Janie, honestly, I am so glad for you to come and share your experience. What has it felt like now? I mean, we've been talking for over an hour. Oh, wow. Have you enjoyed it?
I loved it. Loved it. It's so cool because you're all part of my story. And we're all part of each other's story. You know, I can't believe you're a man now, like fully grown with like facial hair and everything. It's just bizarre. Like, I just remember you as the kid. It was just always there, like the most solid fan in the world. All nodding. Like, everybody knew your name. Everybody, the whole team, the production team, everybody. I think you're the biggest star of the lot of it, really. Like, you've been the most faithful, the most consistent. And you know about all of us. All of it. You've got it all recorded in your mum's attic.
So it's been lovely to have you on here. Like you say, you were on the top of my list as a guest to get on there because I knew you had some fantastic stories and you've not disappointed. It's been great to take a trip down memory lane with you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you for keep asking.
There we have it. Rio on the Glad Pod. Producer Paul, was it everything you'd hoped and more?
Absolutely everything. I loved that episode. I loved chatting to Jane. I think the stories and just how she articulated all of her memories was just perfect. I loved it.
And for you, Di, I know that your paths crossed only a very, very, very short time. And this was another one of those episodes where you're hearing about gladiators where it has no real correlation with your time on the show. You know, obviously when we speak to any of the OGs, there's so much of your time together, but with hers, it's a very different kind of journey that you're listening to. And also someone that you'd inspired leading up to the show as well, whereas previously people kind of coming in at the same level as you. So it must have been fascinating for you to hear.
Absolutely. It just amplifies the whole experience of what GLADS was all about and how she took it literally into different arenas from her filming and motorbiking and everything like that. I just thoroughly enjoyed catching up with her. And likewise, I hope everyone else does too.
Yeah, and Paul, such a fascinating story in terms of her sort of route to being a gladiator, which just shows you, doesn't it, the different routes that you can take. You know, it's not all about athletics and gymnastics. It's sometimes about the look as well.
Yeah, and one side of it that I thought was really interesting was when she kind of spoke about her having imposter syndrome, which was something that was totally new to me. I didn't know that she'd felt like that. It definitely didn't come across on the screen, but because of her background of being just an ambulance driver, which, like say, is an amazing thing to do as a career, but because she hadn't got all of the sporting background that some of the other gladiators had, that's how it made her feel. And that was really interesting to kind of hear that and find out her experiences of how she managed to overcome that, how she managed to find a place within the team. So she spotted, oh, a lot of the female gladiators don't like doing dual. Nightshade obviously was sidelined. So, oh, there's a gap for me to step into that and I can kind of take this on and bear the brunt of duel for some of the female gladiators, just as much as when she said that she liked leading the team out in Gauntlet because she was shielding the rest of the girls away from the contender. So hearing that side of it just makes it, as a fan, something that's just so relatable and just so enjoyable to know that that's how she felt, because she kind of wanted the gladiators to feel that way about each other. So she definitely came across that way.
Yeah, and as well, 1996, she was voted in the top six of TV Babe of 96 competition. Like, what an accolade that is, against the likes of Denise Van Outen, because of her knockout smile and personality, which I'm sure we can all agree about. And I know, Di, it was something that you referred to this next bit, was the fact that she was one of the tallest female UK gladiators at 1.87 metres. So she's just behind Laser at 1.88. And that would have given her a huge advantage when it came to, particularly in duel as well.
Absolutely, her lever lengths. And the fact that she had the power in her core and her whole body, as she said, with the taekwondo background, she could actually ground herself, use that lever length to her advantage, and just be a phenomenal glad.
Oh, final question from me. Is, I was going to ask it during that, but I thought actually I'll wait till the outro for it. But seeing one of your favourite gladiators sliced in half in the film Gladiator, when you watched it for the first time, did you know that Rio was going to end in such a gruesome, her life in the film was going to be ended in such a gruesome way? Did you gasp? Did you scream? Did you shout out at the TV? Did you see it at the movie theatre and storm out because you couldn't believe they killed off Rio?
I did see it in the movie theatre, yeah. And I didn't know what was going to happen, so... It was filmed in between filming the final series of Gladiators, and Rio and Rebel and Rocket were all in it together. And the only reason why I knew that something was happening, because when they came back from filming Gladiator in Malta, they had these massive hair extensions with these gold beads on there, which they must have had put in for the film. So they kept that for the final series of Gladiators. So they looked extra gladiatorial with these long kind of black manes with these black hair. Gold beads in there. And then watching it in the cinema and seeing your favorite gladiators, Rio and Rebel, both kind of get killed off in quite a gruesome way. I think it was it was different. It was kind of obviously thinking about what Gladiators was like back in the day, you know, back in the Roman times, of how it would have been. So yeah, it was interesting to see that.
For some of the gladiators that we've spoken to in the past, you know, their life after Gladiators, sometimes they just kind of go away out of the spotlight and just sort of take the heat off them, you know, give themselves a different life, perhaps a life outside of the public eye. But with Rio, I mean, the list of what she's done after Gladiators is almost a page long. You know, it's incredible. We could have done a whole show based purely on that. And the only thing I perhaps regret not asking her now, but perhaps we can discuss as well, is a lot of gladiators feel that their lives, and I think, Di, you've alluded to this before, you kind of, everything is kind of in different chapters, isn't it? You know, and it's almost like, I think she said it quite a couple of times, that once Gladiators finished, that was it, closure of that chapter, which is why she didn't want to go back for the Sky reboot. And then she's gone on to achieve so many fantastic things, hasn't she, Di?
Absolutely. But life is full of chapters. And, you know, sometimes you have to close a door to open a new one and believe in, not believe in yourself, but reinvent yourself. But always from the core of what you've learned before. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, the gladiatorial spirit that all our glads will have had, still have in whatever they're doing to this present day.
Paul, Di, thank you so much. Remember, guys, you can get in touch with the GladPod by emailing gladpod@gladiatorstv.com, or you can send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll see you again soon.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship, as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the might of...